We'll hear oral argument now in the cases of United States against Patridge and Patridge against the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Mr. Berenger.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Jerry Berenger, and I represent the Patridges in this matter. Two different cases, one going through the tax court process, one that's the criminal prosecution of Mr. Patridge. Dealing with the criminal prosecution and the issue of what is willfulness under the Cheek and Bryan decisions, we believe that the indictment was insufficient, we believe the evidence was insufficient, we believe it was improper for the court not to have granted the motion to dismiss, not to have granted the motion for judgment of acquittal.
Mr. Berenger, I don't mean to be frivolous by asking it this way, but as I read your brief, it looks to me like your theory is that unless Mr. Patridge or any other taxpayer in similar situation is capable of citing 26 U.S.C. Section 7201, then he doesn't have a sufficient level of knowledge, that it's your theory that he actually has to know the particular statute by name. Is that right?
Yes.
And do you have any authority for that other than Bryan, which I don't think says that?
I have no other authority aside from Bryan. I do believe Bryan says it. Bryan says that awareness of the law. What is the law in this instance?
Sure, you can have awareness of the law. I mean, I could tell you that under Illinois law, I'm supposed to stop when the light's red, but I really couldn't sit here and cite to you the provision of the Illinois Code that says that. I'm sure if I went back to my office and poked around, I could find it. But I know the content of that law, and that's what the district court judge here said, that the jury needed to determine whether Mr. Patridge knew the legal obligation that he was under. Why isn't that good enough?
Because I believe that the Cheek Bryan decisions, Ratzlaff.
Why does he have to say 7201? What's the difference?
Again, I believe that the Bryan decision specifically requires the knowledge of the specific legal duty. Now, what's the legal duty as far as the tax returns are concerned? There is a higher standard with respect to tax returns, tax cases, bank cases, than there is with respect to any other type of issue. Where Your Honor was going, yes, under Illinois law dealing with taxes, if you're consciously aware that people file tax returns without knowing the specific tax, this is Illinois law, not federal law for the moment. That is good enough for a concept of willfulness under Illinois law. That's why it shows that there's a higher level with respect to the federal statutes. But Cheek and Bryan made clear that you have to know the specific legal duty, the specific law that applies. Now, can you say that the Internal Revenue Code is a specific law? That doesn't tell us anything. And that's why I believe that you have to know the specific statute that applies with respect to these types of cases. Otherwise, willfulness really means nothing under these two cases and what they've talked about in terms of raising an exception to the ignorance of the law test. Because, as Your Honor had said, dealing with the question of I know that I have to stop at a stoplight, and if I don't, well, I don't know what the law is. Ignorance of the law doesn't save you there. Tax cases are something completely different.
Well, I was making a different point, which is that I know that that is a particular legal obligation. So whether I know it or not, you know, if it were relevant, do I know that? I do. But, you know, when I kept looking at the instruction the district court gave here, he must act with the intent to do something the law forbids. He intentionally, purposefully, with intent to do something the law forbids. Why isn't that good enough?
Because what does that mean when it refers to the law forbids if it's not the specific law that he knows that he's supposed to not violate?
That is with a bad purpose to disobey or to disregard the law.
And I'll ask the question again. What law are we talking about in that instance? Are we talking about 6012? Are we talking about 151D?
Suppose he knows that the law requires him to file an income tax return every year. Suppose he knows that the law also requires him honestly to report his income on the tax return. Isn't that? And then he deliberately doesn't honestly report his income on that tax.
Then that would require the evidence to prove those issues, and no evidence was brought forth with respect to those issues in this case. There was no evidence that said Mr. Patridge knew specifically what the tax obligations were on any particular year. There certainly is no question that Mr. Patridge did not report all the income. He reported all the income. It just didn't turn out the way the IRS liked it in terms of the various tax forms and tax returns dealing with the trust, the corporation, and himself individually. All the income was always there. So now, at what point is it then become the question with respect to what did he know or not know with in terms of the law. When we were dealing with evasion, the specific intent to evade the statute, what is the evidence that was brought forth? And there wasn't any evidence that was brought forth that dealt with the question of that he knew he was evading a specific statutory requirement under the Internal Revenue Code.
Well, look, we don't have Vulcan mind readers. You know, we have juries who are inferring from a variety of circumstances, in all cases, what somebody knows or what somebody thinks or what somebody intends, right? There's plenty of evidence like that here.
I disagree. And obviously, if we were all Vulcan mind readers, it would make jury selection much easier. We would know that they could all see what each person thought. But in this instance, what is the evidence here that deals with this subject? We have the notices of deficiency. We have that Mr. Patridge was advised by Mr. Phillips to begin to liquidate the assets in the trust, and we have him putting it into another investment vehicle.
That's and we have it. Everything that Mr. Patridge did that the government was charging him
The whole
with.
Series of sham transactions proves his knowledge. The only sensible thing he could have done was plead guilty.
Knowledge
then
of what?
He could have gotten a reduction.
The question really is knowledge of what?
No person would engage in the transactions he engaged in without knowing of the tax obligation, which he thought he was evading.
I disagree. In fact...
Fine. You can disagree all you like, but the jury convicted. And if you give your other clients advice along these lines, you're doing them a very serious disservice. They will end up in jail, too.
I appreciate the advice, Your Honor. It would appear that the court has its mind made up in terms of what the issues really are. That does not change the fact that we believe that what we've set forth in the brief demonstrates that Mr. Patridge should have been found not guilty, and in this instance, dealing with the recent Rita decision, should in fact now have been released.
Were other people convicted here, clients of his who...
Mr. Patridge
in these sham, offshore trusts and professional tax protester.
Mr. Patridge was an insurance salesman. He wasn't a professional tax protester. He was the only one.
He acted like a professional tax.
He was the only one of the Aegis clients as of the time that he was prosecuted, who in fact was prosecuted. All the Aegis individuals are still pending trial here in the district court in Chicago and haven't yet gone to trial for what they did in setting up this, as the court has said, sham trust scheme. Mr. Patridge purchased the product. Now, the court has, Judge Easterbrook has said that it's obvious that he had knowledge of what he was doing and he was trying very hard to avoid the taxes, but if you look
Or actually, to be more accurate, what he said, a jury could so infer from the evidence of what he did, and that's a little bit different.
My apologies. That the jury could so infer that. But what is it that he specifically, how much was the original tax that he would have owed in this instance? Well, that's a question as well because of the notices of deficiency issue that's still pending in this tax side of the case. I was here a year ago dealing with what I would call Patridge 1 and the notices of deficiency subject at that time, and we still see where the IRS is pursuing collection from both sides.
But it hasn't. But the IRS has a very well-defined sequence of steps that it takes from the notice of deficiency on through, you know, assessments and levies and all sorts of things. It has not collected more. As far as I know, it hasn't collected anything yet, but maybe it started to collect. But what baffles me is why Mr. Patridge, all along the way on the IRS side of this, hasn't done what the IRS has suggested. Why didn't he file, when he got the notice of deficiency, a claim in the tax court if he thought that the amounts were wrong? Why didn't he, the second time, you know, when you had Patridge 1, if you will, why hadn't he just gone to the tax court? The notices say, if you don't like what we've done, go to the tax court. What was the reason to go to the district court?
Why did we go to the district court the first time?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it seems like you're making it much harder than it has to be. If you want to challenge these things and have, you know, a judicial finding about what's the amount of the deficiency, is it okay to pursue both the trust side and the individual side? Of course, the IRS doesn't know how the money's got allocated ex ante, right? Maybe some of it is on the trust side. But there are mechanisms for challenging this, which Mr. Patridge has not really used to their best advantage.
Well, and I will acknowledge that there was no tax court petition filed in 2000 when it would have had to have been filed. The argument, the discussion, the testimony involving Mr. Phillips and several of the other IRS agents, Miller and Helfer in particular, dealt with why he did not go to tax court originally. He hired J.K. Harris to deal with these issues by the date.
But they're not lawyers.
No, but they are, as you see on the on television all the time, they hold themselves out as tax professionals. We have CPAs and former IRS agents capable of handling your problems. This was a problem that the Patridges had to deal with. They hire J.K. Harris. J.K. Harris does nothing, and suddenly we now have notices of deficiencies that become set in stone. The original district court, Patridge 1, a year ago, was dealing with the CDP process and whether or not federal district court was a proper venue versus tax court. Now it's coming back through on the tax court side as well.
Thank you, Mr. Barringer.
Thank you.
Mr. Davis.
May it please the court, Gregory Davis on behalf of the United States and the commissioner. It appears that the court is well familiar with this case, and unless the court has questions, I'm not going to waste the court's time.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.